Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have classes today in San Diego. It's going to be Introduction to Mycology with Tilly from the San Diego Mycological Society. Hmm. That would probably be a very interesting class.
It would be.
It would be great.
I know I've said it before, when the Mycological Society has their shows in Balboa Park, that is one of the most interesting plant-related shows I have ever been to. Mm-hmm. The stuff that they come up with, and a lot of it is foraged just mm-hmm. around San Diego.
Yeah.
Is just amazing. Mm. It's absolutely incredible, the things that they come up with. So if you're interested in that, because there's a lot more to mycology in the plant world than just mildew.
Mm-hmm. there was a fungus among us.
Yeah, definitely.
Are they stink caps?
Oh, yeah.
I have a bunch of those growing by our front door this morning. And you know why they have that word stink in them? They stink. I got down low to take some photographs and they have that, you know, dead body smell.
Oh, that's not good.
Wow.
It's not an attractive thing.
No. And in Poway today at 9:30, it's going to be feeding caterpillars with Ken Abernathy from Caterpillar Chow. We've had him on the show.
And if you'd like to go back and listen to his show with us, it was aired on the 18th of April. So
okay.
You can look that up on our page.
Yep. Wasn't that long ago. So if you're interested in feeding caterpillars, that would be the class to go to. So the San Diego class starts at 9:00. Poway class starts at 9:30. Get there early to get a seat and enjoy the class. We have a special guest with us today. We have Adams, who is one of our managers in our Poway store, is with us. Adams, thanks for joining us for the show.
Good morning, Ken. Good morning, George. Good morning, John.
Hey, and, Adams.
For those of you that don't know Adams, he is our resident fruit tree expert in the Poway store, and we're going to be talking to him about all kinds of stuff going on with fruit trees. So, Adams, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me again. It's definitely going to be another exciting year fruit tree wise. Fruit trees are only getting more and more popular, so we keep bringing in more and more varieties and good varieties for you to choose from.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's one of the, I say the same thing with roses. It's right. One of those things where mm-hmm. you think you would hit the law of diminishing returns on it, but after almost 100 years, we have not. And mm-hmm. we still sell more fruit trees and more roses every year, and it just amazes me. But you've been very good at coming up with some new varieties. Well, last year was challenging. Ellie Cook finally went completely bankrupt or just went completely out of business, I should say. Mm. They disappeared. They were one of our bigger suppliers. So that kind of threw things for a loop. But also there's some big changes at our other main supplier that caused
a bit of upheaval
in the fruit tree industry, in the fruit tree supply chain, I should say. And I know you've been working hard to work around that for this next upcoming season, but we still have some challenges out there.
Yeah, there are definitely still some challenges. The big one last year was we could get almost no pears at all. There are certainly some shortages in the ways of cherries and some things as well. But this year we're going to try to work around that. We're going to bring in at least one, maybe two additional bare root fruit tree vendors and try to source from multiple different sources to try to maximize the varieties we can have.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you come up with this year. It should be interesting. As far as this season is concerned, you and George, I know, have been talking about it. There's been some issues as far as fruit production is concerned.
And leaf production.
And leaf production. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell everybody what's going on there, what you think is going
on. So this last winter, we had almost no chill here in Southern California. So all the deciduous fruit trees require wintertime chilling in order to stimulate it to produce flowers and fruit and leaves the following season. The trees basically did not get that. So the trees are still confused. They're not sure what to do. And they're not leafing out. They're not flowering. They're not fruiting. A lot of trees are partially leafing out, or you might get one or two fruit here or there, but there's been a lot of issues with that.
Now that when we have a lack of chill like that, then sometimes some trees can fail to go into dormancy too.
Correct. And usually if they're failing to go into dormancy, we recommend stripping all the leaves off by hand. That can force the tree to think it is dormant sometimes.
We're trying to get them to rest in the winter.
I know if you were doing it the way that we advocate that people do it, back in the day, if you had a tree that didn't go dormant, you just hit it with lime sulfur spray. That would do it.
It would go
dormant very quickly when they get hit with lime sulfur spray. But lime sulfur spray is no longer available in California for homeowner use. So
chill, Adam. So, you know, you and I talk about it a lot. So the basic math is below 45 degrees from 1 November to 1 March. There are other models, right? And when you say we got very little chill, what are some of the chill hours that we normally could expect around here?
Normally closer to the coast, you're looking at, you know, maybe 1 to 200 chill hours. As you go inland here in Poway, generally around 400. Even further inland up like Ramona where I am, I can get as many as 700 in a normal year.
And there are microclimates within there, right? So, I mean, you and I talked about this on our properties where one spot of your yard could be 7 or 8 degrees warmer than another spot, and it's shaded in the winter. So therefore, you can accumulate much more chill in those sections than other parts of your yard.
Yeah, absolutely. Like at the top of my property, I rarely freeze. So I've got passion fruit growing, for instance, whereas at the bottom of my property, I'm typically down into the 20s on a lot of nights. I get far more chill down there at the bottom. And so I put some pretty high chill fruit trees down there at the bottom, which of course this year was an issue for them. But in a lot of years, I get good fruit on those.
Well, you said you get up to about 700 hours.
Yeah, I average about 700 hours at the bottom of my property.
That's pretty.
I've seen over 900.
High chill. Yeah, so. That's pretty.
That's a good chill.
That's a good chill. Yeah, I would say you could grow just about anything.
And
those conditions.
And this year, though, even with so few chill hours, the ones we did get were probably pretty well offset by such warm days. That can actually counteract some of that chill that we were getting.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
I don't have any deciduous fruit trees in my yard.
Oh, really?
Well, I do now. I have one that I planted a dwarf nectarine this year.
Okay.
But I don't have any big ones. Trees.
We have a lot at 80, 90 fruit trees, and Adams has a ton as well. And he and I compare notes. Normally it's what gopher or squirrel we got the day before, but we talk a lot about our fruit trees. And, you know, when you have the right amount of chill, you get all the leaves come out nice and even, you know, they'll come out and the tree is lush. You get flowers set, you produce good fruit, and then you have, you know, everything kind of ripens uniformly. Mm-hmm. This year, many of my fruit trees, those that were incredibly productive last year, like the pluaries, there wasn't a single piece of fruit on them. Didn't flower. And then my aprium, which has always been very productive, barely has any leaves on it. It started out at the bottom and it's trying to make its way up. And here we are in June. So similar?
Yeah, very, very similar on a lot of my trees. I do have fruit on a few trees. We'll talk about some of those that actually do seem to be doing well here in a minute. But the ones that are doing poorly, say some of my apples are slow to leaf out. And then I think more on the peach and nectarine side tend to be doing fairly poorly. Even some of the low chill varieties.
My early peaches did very well. Tropic Prince and what's that other one? Anyway, the earlier peaches did well. Florida Prince, thank you. Yeah, did very well, but the others did not. And now I know that we see this a lot on the San Diego Gardener page.
Yes.
A lot of people are complaining, what's going on with my fruit trees? Why aren't I getting any fruit this year?
Yeah, a lot of trees are slow to leaf out this year. And then when they did begin to leaf out, things came in spurts. So we'd have a big burst of warm weather, then it would cool down again. And so I have on the same tree leaves that are large and well-formed. And then on the, you know, further down the branch, there'll be little tiny leaves that have barely opened up. And it's a very strange year all around.
I actually had one of my trees double bloom. It bloomed early, set fruit, then bloomed again and set fruit. My double jewel peach. It's actually set a good amount of fruit this year.
That's a newer one for you, right?
It is one of the newer ones. I got it just about, I think, 3 years ago.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite peaches, but it's in the warmer part of my yard, so it got next to no chill, but it actually set two crops of peaches. So I have some larger ones that are just about ripe right now, and I've got some that are still half size, probably another 100, 150 on there.
Oh, wow.
That is a very good peach. You brought some in for us last season, and that's a good one to consider.
It's a beautiful bloomer, and it seemed to be just fine with almost no chill. The reason I initially got it was because it typically blooms very, very late. And so that protects from the late frost that I get up there. But because I've actually had years where it didn't bloom until May. I think 2 years ago, right after I got it, it didn't bloom at all until May. But it still had fruit, nice full peaches ready by July.
Now, one of the problems with if we have a winter of low chill, one of the problems that you have with that is you can't counteract that. There's really, there's no way to do that. You can't simulate chill. You have to have chill. There's really no way of.
You could build a greenhouse that's a cold house.
Well, I guess you could if you wanted to do that. But yeah, so there you're really at the mercy of the weather there, and when we live in as mild a climate as we do overall in San Diego, that's just one of the things that you're gonna have to deal with.
Right.
Yeah, and I know it probably one of the more temperamental fruit trees out there. And I kind of gave up trying to deal with it. Are apricots? They're notoriously tough. I think probably one of the better ones that we've had over the years was Katie, which was a little bit more
forgiving,
predictable. Okay. A little bit more predictable. A little bit lower chill. I had one in my yard for some time, and I don't know what happened, but the Katie part of the tree got away from it, and the rootstock came up. Beautiful tree, but
pretty flowers.
Didn't flower.
Not
at
even
all.
Flowers.
Okay. Wouldn't even flower. So
our Katie was very, very productive last year. This year, not a single piece.
Not a single
fruit.
Piece. Oh, that is crazy. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Adams Bruderer, the manager of the Highway Store. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. Our special guest, Adams Bruderer, manager at our Poway store, who is also our local fruit tree expert in the Poway store. And we've been talking about some of the challenges of this year's fruit tree crop, and pretty much because it was a mild winter.
Yeah, it was a hot winter. We had some warm temperatures in February and March.
We did. Yeah. We did. And during the break, Adams, we were talking about that. You got some high heat up in your neighborhood, up in Ramona, during the blooming season.
Yep, right during the middle of bloom. I think the hottest day actually hit right at 100 degrees. So some of my low chill varieties, which I still had some chill at the lower part of my property, some of the trees that were fine that were in complete full bloom still failed to set a single piece of fruit. My Candy Heart Pluary, for instance, must have had tens of thousands of blooms on it, fully white, not a single piece of fruit.
Well, and I had mentioned our cherry trees, the mini royal and royal leaves. Similarly, they have tons of flowers, and I think there were two or three pieces of fruit on each tree. That was it. Little cherries.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It is very bizarre. And Adams, earlier in the first segment, you had mentioned that your higher chill have not leafed out yet.
They're leafing out, but they didn't give me any blooms, or maybe one or two blooms. A lot of them just leafed out without any bloom set.
And we often talk about apples being very adaptable, you know, so you can put a 600, a 700 hour apple tree, even though you're living somewhere that gets 300. And we've had very good success up where we live, where we don't get 700 hours, but I have a number of 600, 700, 800, and 900 hour apples that traditionally bloom well and flower and set fruit. Mm-hmm. This year they've set some fruit, but they have hardly any leaves on it. And the fruit are really small and very sparse, but just not enough chill.
Yep. Mm. My trees, again, also those are one of the ones that are not leafing as well. But I do have a fair amount of fruit on my Granny Smith apple, my Arkansas Black Spur apple. Those both actually set fairly well.
I love Arkansas Black. That's a good apple.
My neighbor has what I believe is an apple in their backyard, and I can see it from my backyard right now, and it's covered in fruit, and it looks ripe. The apples are red. But unfortunately with Anna's, you've got to pick them right at the right.
It's like a 2-day window and you're done.
If you leave them on too long, they get kind of mealy and pithy, which I think, because they were saying that they don't like the apples on the tree. And I think they just had left them on too long.
Not picking them at the right time. Yeah. Our Anna is one that did fruit really well this year because it doesn't need hardly anything.
Just look at it and it'll flower usually. And sometimes it'll flower multiple times a year too.
Yep.
So are you able, how close is it to the fence? Can you reach it with a pole or anything?
I can't
start stealing them?
No, unfortunately. Although at this point, they're so red at this point, they're probably shot, I'm guessing.
Yeah, my Anna did really well too, but the squirrels got to the fruit long before I did.
So I think I was...
It's been a bad squirrel year too.
Yeah.
Very bad squirrel year. Part of the problem was we had very good rain in October, November, and just the very first part of December, and then it stopped. And so
that's true.
You know, what happens when you get that, it's like the storms come in, it cools everything down, but then we get all this 80, 90 degree weather later. It just disrupts everything. The one thing that has been better is we've had far less peach leaf curl because we didn't have the residual wetness in winter. Yeah. So almost none this year.
Yeah. Not having fruit trees in my yard. I was going to ask, have you noticed any other problems from the mild winter that we had as far as disease problems or anything like that?
Oh, they're far less. No brown rot, no peach leaf curl.
We have a lot more snakes.
Oh.
Yeah, and more ground squirrels.
A lot more snakes than we've seen in the past. Because
it was very wet. Yeah, there have been a lot of snakes.
But we were traveling a couple weeks ago, and when I left, there were one of the gold-kissed apricot, small set of fruit, maybe 20 pieces of fruit. They were all not ready yet. Mm. We came back. There was one left on the tree, and we didn't have anyone harvesting. So it's those squirrels.
Something got up there and got them.
We use a squirrelinator trap, and by the way, I've found that one of the things they really love to eat are these Aloha bars you can get from Costco. It's kind of it's chocolate coconut, and there's something about that they go nuts for. And so I put that in with a little bird seed, a little bit of nuts, and we're getting 2 to 4 ground squirrels a week.
Nice.
Yeah, so
we
that's
usually
working
use
well.
What they ate that I've seen, you know, like an apple's on the ground half eaten, I throw it in the squirrelinator. A peach, I throw it in the squirrelinator.
Mm-hmm. And anything they're already eating, or I have ducks, so I use the duck feed. That works really well. Or tomatoes work great because they have a nice bright color. They see them from a distance and are attracted to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you did not have as big a gopher problem this last year that you did the year before, did you?
Yeah, I think 2 years ago was a major issue. There's always gophers. I'm still catching them weekly, but they're compared to 2 years ago when I caught 325, nothing like that.
Oh my goodness.
We work in an interesting place because people come to work in other places like, hey, how was your weekend? Or, how, you know, what'd you do? Oh, I was at the ball game. We played whatever. Adams comes in or I come in and look at each other. Got two squirrels yesterday. Yeah. Or first thing, we don't even say hello. It's got a gopher last night. You know, the first thing we say.
We had a customer at the San Diego store a number of years ago. There was, I don't know if we still have them or not, but there was an electronic rat trap that was out called a rat zapper. And I think he actually brought it in one time to show my dad because he kept a running count on his. He'd take a Sharpie
like
a World War II fighter. He'd put a hash mark on his rat zapper every time he got a rat. And he was very, very successful with that.
I like those. I've used those in the past. They're effective, but they're one and done till you clean it out and reset it.
Yes.
Where the ratinator, 3, 4, 5, 7 in a night.
Yeah, we. Always get two squirrels in the squirrelinator. So
really?
You you put enough food so that there's plenty for them to share. But my record, when I had my home on a canyon, I had 8 in a trap one time.
Five is my record for those, for the squirrels.
I think four is my record. The reason I'm not sure is the vultures will often get to them before you do.
Before you do. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have that problem. I don't have gophers and I don't have squirrels.
Oh, wow. Mr. Special over there. Yeah.
I have spotted kangaroo rats on our trail cam in the backyard, but
Is that just by where you live? There are no. Well, you don't have a lot of fruit.
I don't have a lot of fruit, and unfortunately, the soil in our yard is so bad that it would be almost impossible for a gopher to dig through it. It's almost solid rock.
So you need to put more gophers on your property to help clean up that soil,
aerate the soil. Yeah. What else can you tell us about the upcoming season?
Well, this upcoming season, we are going to add some new varieties. Also, going to try to focus on bringing in some larger caliper trees as well. Those I think people are always looking for is something just a little bit bigger than what we currently have been stocking.
Some of the trees we got in last year were nice enormous trees. Caliper. Yes. I mean, they were like almost like baseball bats we brought in.
Those were the multi-graft trees. So I'm going to bring in some of the regular trees that are also, I don't think they're going to be quite that large, but
were
they should 5/8? Be.
What were they listed as?
The multigrass don't come listed as caliper size, but I am going to be bringing in some 1-inch caliper trees this year.
Yeah, they look the bigger caliper trees look really nice, and you know when you don't really realize it until you see some of the bare root stuff that's being sold in other places, or especially the prepackaged bare root stuff. It's basically just a whip.
Yeah,
but we can get some of the bigger stuff, so that'll be nice to have that in stock.
Yes, there's not going to be tons of it, but I'm gonna get a good selection from every fruit category just so we have something larger for everyone.
And typically, the trees that we stock in both of our stores during the bare root season is typically bigger than what you'll find, in other garden centers or in
I could never understand the logic of buying a tree in a package where they cut all the roots off. Because the whole point of having a bare root tree is I want to have that full mature root system that I put in the ground and it instantly it looks like a 3-year-old tree that year. Sometimes you'll get fruit that year. But when they cut all the roots off, you've set it back so severely that's what's the point of buying a bare root tree?
That's kind of the same thing with the packaged roses.
Yeah,
to get them into that sleeve, you've got to take a lot. You've got to take a lot of the a lot of the roots off of it.
Yeah, typically we do have some nice size of bare root fruit trees, with a couple of exceptions when they're new introductions. Like when I bought my King David apple, it really should have been called Prince David because it aspired to be a king, but it was this little tiny wispy thing. And when I bought my first, the Royal Crimson, it had a numeric alphanumeric name. It wasn't Royal Crimson yet.
I had one too.
And that too was this tiny little wisp thing. And then the next year they sold them with branches. I'm like, oh, you can buy them with branches.
and sometimes that's all we can get are the smaller caliper trees. Sometimes for whatever reason they all grow available.
If you put them in and take care of them, they'll all get to that point where they look like the larger caliper trees.
Yeah. I know at one time we used to actually carry true bare root fig trees, but we stopped doing that a number of years ago.
And pomegranates
and the ones we sell now are in sleeve pots, which are it's about a four by four pot, but they're about 18 inches deep or 16 inches deep, I guess. The attrition rate on those drops dramatically over true bare root, at least with the fig trees. Pomegranates, I think, are pretty tough no matter what, but the fig trees, the failure rate on it is virtually zero. I mean, we really don't have a problem with them anymore since we have gone to that. So the trees are going to be a little bit smaller because they're in that container, but with that root system and just overcoming the shock of being yanked out of the ground, and it really helps a lot.
And figs produce when they're so young. I've seen some of those little sleeves with fruit already on them.
You know, it surprises me that there was such a high attrition rate on those, because figs, you take a cutting and stick it in the ground and it's producing fruit by the end of the season.
Yeah.
So that's kind of odd, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. And I don't know what the reason was, but the fatality rate on true bare root figs was much higher than what we deal with now. So yeah, it's a, The system we're, the system we've got going now works pretty good.
It works really well. And, you know, because I've made a lot of fig cuttings. And like you said, Adams, I'll put them in a pot to start them. And before I ever put them in the ground, they're producing fruit with before the leaves are coming out. It's an amazing tree.
It is. And
very vigorous.
We've got some more stuff to talk about with figs, but we need to take a quick break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman, John Clements, and Adams Bruder. We'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Adams Bruder, manager of the Highway store. We're talking about fruit trees. We were talking about figs before we went to the break, and figs are pretty, for the most part, they're pretty foolproof as far as fruit tree growing is
concerned. Drought tolerant,
yep. Easy to grow, nice looking plant. But one big problem that we've had, I guess it's a couple of seasons now, is the black fig fly.
Your BFF.
Yeah. And George, you were just doing some research, and there's nothing new out there on
nothing
on
new those. As far as controls or sprays to help curtail it.
That's unfortunate because that's a tough one. And I had mentioned that my grandparents had a huge Corky's Honey Delight fig in their yard. It's massive. It's probably the biggest fig tree I've ever seen, but I don't think anybody's done anything to it in the last 15 years. Tons of figs on the ground though. Not fully mature ones, and
that's a symptom of that fly.
And you were saying you don't just go and pick figs off the tree and
not
eat them anymore.
I used to grab them by the handful and eat them off the trees. And now, even though typically, if it's going to have the fly in it, it would have fallen typically. But still, if we pick figs, we bring them in, we cut them in half on the counter and then in quarters. Mm-hmm. And just leave them for a little while and see if any of those seeds are moving.
If anything's moving.
Which I never used to do. I never had a fear of it at all. And fear is not the right word. And apprehension might be a better word.
You know, speaking of fruit flies, I haven't heard much about olive fruit fly.
Not in a
recently.
Long time.
Well, but that got to be a real big problem for quite a while. I do notice though that one of our favorite wineries that Melanie and I go to here in San Diego. I guess it's technically Escondido. It's a domain artifact off of Highland Valley
Road.
I like
that place too.
It's one of the better ones in San Diego for sure. But they have a ton of olive trees on their property by their tasting room that when you drive on. And it actually, part of the parking lot is amongst some of the olive trees, but they spray all their trees with kaolin.
Okay. Yeah. Kaolin clay.
Yeah. With the clay.
Yep.
To prevent the olive fruit fly. Cause they do sell olive oil there too. So that's another one of the products that they have.
So many olive trees are suffering in San Diego.
Yes.
Now with xylella.
That's another one.
They're dying all over Rancho Bernardo. I'd say 2/3 are gone.
Is the vector still the glass wing sharpshooter?
Still.
That was a problem up at, was it in Northern California, wasn't it? Where they were selling, Costco was selling grapes?
Yes.
I don't think they had, I didn't see them down here.
No.
This one, was from Burchell Nurseries.
I think so.
The grapes. And glassy wing sharpshooter in your grapes is a bad thing.
Well, I remember about 15, 20 years ago when it got really bad.
Yeah.
Northern California, those people were going insane, trying to keep the glassy wing sharpshooter out of there. I had a friend that owned a nursery in Santa Elena, and every time a truck would come in, they'd have to have the ag inspectors there to go over. They would go over everything just to make sure that they were not bringing it in because they were terrified.
Well, for grapes, it causes Pierce's disease.
Pierce's disease, right? which is another form of
fastidiosa. Yeah. So, and there are really so many trees that have various forms of scorch. You know, oleander scorch. Obviously, it's all the same bacterium. It's the xylella fastidiosa. But we were at a party for friends in Peñasquitos, French Bernardo area, and all the liquid ambers had liquid amber scorch.
Yep.
You know, just
that's another one.
You can spot it from quite a distance, but
I've cut down six or seven on the property.
We'd lost a couple here at the nursery because of it. Yeah. So it's
widespread.
Not much you can. Not much you can do.
I've
about
even
it.
Seen it on Pittosporum now. Pittosporum undulatum. Really? Yeah.
Wow.
They get scorched too.
So, well, let's move on to something that's a little more fun to talk about.
Yeah. I did want to circle back one thing just quickly on the black fig fly though. Mm-hmm. If you've cut open your fruit and you're having issues and you don't see that larva inside, look very closely at the skin. You'll often see a little tiny, tiny hole, and that's the exit hole where the larva are exiting the fruit to then drop and pupate in the soil. Mm. So if you're not finding any larva, but your figs are dropping early and rotting, check for that little exit hole on there.
Yeah, because they've already left.
Yes. Right.
And they're going to be in the ground waiting to get their wings and start the cycle.
So make sure you're cleaning up any of that fruit that is falling on the ground as well. Yeah.
That's a good point. You know, that's... When you're growing deciduous fruit trees, that's a good rule of thumb to follow anyway, just to keep, it's mostly disease problems.
Yes.
Peach leaf curl being probably the biggest one, but there's a number, just clean up all the, not just the fruit, but also the litter. Just clean it all up from underneath the tree.
Well, keeping the fruit there also contributes to an increase in rodents.
Yes.
If that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You will have issues with that.
And I'm
as
guilty
well.
Of it, yeah. So you know.
Yeah. You have a list of some stuff that we are looking forward to having this year.
Yep. We're getting hopefully another 10 or 12 new varieties of fruits this year. We're going to hopefully get a pink pearl apple actually has a pink flesh on the inside of the apple. So that's going to be real fun. It's rated a little bit higher chill around 500 hours, but it is an apple. So I do think it'll probably go lower than that.
Just not this year.
Yep. As far as apricots go, we're going to bring in a new aprium variety, a Leacott aprium.
Oh, those are very good.
Also a little higher chill, but it's one of the few apriums we haven't brought in. So we're going to bring that variety in. And then there's also a new mulberry variety called Mojo Berry, and it's actually more dwarfing than the typical dwarf mulberry variety we get in. It's only supposed to grow to 6 to 7 feet.
Oh my goodness.
Is it a Persian or a Pakistan?
I actually don't know which type it is, but it's going to be smaller fruited.
Okay. So like the Persian.
Yeah, it's probably closer to a Persian.
Because the other one is the other dwarf.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's going to be more like a big shrub than a...
Yes.
Than a tree.
Exactly. Because even the dwarf everbearing that we bring in now can still grow 10 or 15 feet over time. Yeah. So
unless
this
you
one
keep
will actually,
cutting it and make it more shrub-like. Yeah.
But this one will actually stay... An actual true dwarf on its own.
Interesting. Anything else that we got
then
coming in?
A couple other apples. Last year we had the North Pole and Scarlet Sentinel columnar apples. This year I'm going to bring in two different apples instead. I'm going to bring in the Fruit Snacks All Red and the Fruit Snacks Sweet Treat. If you don't know, columnar apples are apples that really only grow about 2 to 3 feet wide, about 8 to 10 feet tall. So they're perfect for containers, small spaces, things like that.
Are those all self-fruitful or they require a pollinator?
The columnar apples definitely require a pollinizer. They need each other for pollination.
Okay, those two? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But I think other columnar apples work. I think it has to do with the timing of the blooms. But the All Red is actually red-fleshed as well.
A red-fleshed apple?
Yes.
That would be interesting to see. So, I don't think I've ever seen an apple that has a flesh color other than that kind of creamy white.
So we have.
That I can think of.
We're going to have options for both pink and red this year. So
I actually do. Melanie and I were just talking about it the other day, and we got a spot where we're going to put a couple of columnar apples in.
Oh, good.
In the backyard.
Then then you'll be able to come in and complain about rats and squirrels.
It looks like
of
everybody
us.
Else. The columnar apples are really neat because they typically don't grow in a tree form. Adam said, it's a column. And Monrovia grew them for a while years ago. And they're absolutely beautiful trees. It's a neat plant.
I was in upstate New York 2 years ago, and a whole orchard that used to be regular trees is nothing but columnar.
Columnar apples.
Tons of them. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a neat tree.
You can plant a larger density of trees than you can with a standard pruning practice.
Well, you know, down in New Zealand, they actually grow apples almost like grapevines. on a trellis system like that. So it's not really an espalier, but it's a trellis system. Looks very similar to grape.
Interesting. I think you mentioned that before. Yeah.
But acres and acres and acres of these things, the amount of apples they must produce has got to be staggering. But really, it's a really pretty way to, if you're going to farm apples, it's a pretty way to do it if you have a smaller space, but really want to maximize the production.
All right. So, and then additional varieties I'm planning on bringing in are another jujube, the Sandia jujube. That's a better for fresh eating variety, but the jujube popularity seems to be changing a little bit. The common Lee and Lang, which was about all you could get for a while, those are becoming a lot less popular, and people are now branching out looking for all the unique varieties.
And sugar cane and honey jar and all those.
Yes.
Hmm.
That's also another plant that's very drought tolerant.
Oh, yeah. Jujubes. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, it's another one I'm not a big fan of.
And it doesn't even taste like dirt.
No, it doesn't. But
And ironically, they call that jujube a sandia. In Spanish, sandia is a watermelon. So I don't know why they'd call it a watermelon jujube. But
maybe it has some extra flavors.
Maybe so.
But yeah, it's flavor it's profile. Supposed to be a good variety. But yeah, like they're saying, it's super hardy, drought tolerant. Mm-hmm. You will get better fruit production with a good watering schedule, because jujubes need to send out a large spurt of growth, and they actually send out their primary shoots, their secondary shoots, their fruiting spurs, and their fruiting wood all in that same 2 month period, and they'll flower and fruit all on that wood. So really encourage good production, it does help to water them well during that flowering season. But once they're established, they'll survive with very little water.
Well, speaking of increasing production, most of them require a pollinator. Does this one require a pollinator?
This one, partially self-fruitful.
Okay.
Yes. Lee, if you only want one, get the Lee. It's fully self-fruitful. And they need almost no chill. Mine has a great crop of fruit set this year. And even though we talk about them being drought tolerant, they will tolerate very wet conditions. But be warned, if you give them wet conditions, they will send up suckers everywhere.
Yes, they will.
I was not aware.
I have another whole crop growing off to the side. Mm. It's all flowering, so I'm leaving it. That was on my GA866, and I don't know what they use for a rootstock, but that rootstock is very prolific.
Does it produce anything?
This is the first year that it's really taken. I mean, not the tree's been there for a while, but this particular clump of runner that's coming up as a volunteer is probably about 3 or 4 feet away from the actual tree, and it's covered in flowers right now. So I'm letting it go to see what it's going to give me.
Yeah, they will give fruit. I haven't tried any from the rootstocks yet, but they're not high quality fruit.
Typically not, as in most of the rootstocks. Yeah.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and Adams Bruder from our Poway store. And we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman, John Clements, and our special guest, Adams Bruder, from our Poway store. And we are talking about fruit trees. Adams, what other varieties can people be looking forward to this January when the season starts again?
Another new variety I want to bring in is the Flory Miniature Peach. It's a true dwarf peach. It only grows about 6 feet as well. But I think what's going to make this one really special, it has that super bright red bloom like the Red Baron peach does. So it will be a miniature peach with really good fruit with just a spectacular bloom on it.
Well, wait a minute. How do you know it's really good fruit? Because I know you don't like the Red Baron.
Well, okay. I haven't tried the fruit on this one yet. And it's not that I don't like the Red Baron peach. I'd say the Red Baron's one of my least favorite homegrown peaches.
But you would eat it if it was given to you.
Oh, I'd eat it over a store-bought peach any day. Anything you grow is going to be better than a store-bought. Mm-hmm. We just have a little disagreement over the flavor of the Red Baron.
I like the Red Baron a lot.
Now, when we talk about dwarf peaches, dwarf nectarines, things like that, or true dwarf nectarines, it's the size of the tree that we're talking about. Not the size of the fruit.
Right.
They'll still produce full-size
fruit. Still full size, even they're even usually come in on full size rootstocks. They're just genetically dwarf trees.
Yeah, and they're cute little trees. My neighbor up the street from me has got a couple in his front yard actually, and it actually can make a nice It can make a nice landscape plant if you don't mind it being dormant in the wintertime. But in the springtime, when they bloom, they're really pretty. And then if you can keep the peach leaf curl off of them, it's a really lush, really lush looking tree as well.
Yep, they're great for container growing.
That's another one. Yeah, if you have a tight area, that's a good one to.
We've had one here in a grow bag.
In a grow pot.
Yeah. For smart pot. 7 years now.
Probably at least that. Yeah.
And it's thriving.
It does very well. Does very, very well. What else we got, Adams?
Also, we're going to bring in a galaxy peach. So this is going to be a larger donut style peach. And so that one's going to be an exciting variety.
Just so our listeners know, when we talk about a donut style peach, the fruit, it's flat. It almost looks like...
Yeah, also called saucer style.
Saucer style, yeah.
You can almost punch the seed right out of the center of the fruit and just have the fruit.
Yeah, it's a strange looking fruit. I don't know that I've ever had one.
It's white.
To eat.
Right?
Yeah, they're good.
They're very good. I think the regular donut's better than the Sazi Swirl, which is another donut style peach. But Sazi Swirl ripens so early that you can spread your season out really long with that variety.
Interesting.
Right. And then also we've had a number of people asking for golden or yellow plums. So this year we're going to bring in the golden nectar plum.
Golden nectar. Okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
That's a fully bright yellow golden beautiful plum. I planted that one as just a tiny little whip. I was able to get the last one of a sleeve from Ellie Cook. So I put that in a couple of years back right before they went out of business. And so I was hoping to get fruit this year, but with the lack of chill, it didn't happen. But it's big enough. I'm sure next year, as long as we get some chill, I should get some fruit to try that one.
It sounds similar to a green gage plum. Is it a Japanese plum?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Speaking of green gage, that one barely flowered this year for us as well, but there's two pieces of fruit on it. And last year, it was covered in fruit.
Usually,
are two. And I just looked at it yesterday afternoon while I was working around the yard. Two pieces. So I'm going to guard them from the rodents.
I would definitely do that.
That's probably
my favorite plum. Green gage plum. Yeah.
Mine bloomed very well. But what's interesting was I didn't get out there and get all the leaves pulled off. It bloomed when it still had last year's leaves on it.
Oh, really?
It just didn't set the fruit. But it did bloom very well for me.
We do that to our apple trees. Just go out and remove all the leaves and our roses. But I don't do it to any other fruit tree. Because they're usually low chill and it's not a big deal. But the apples, I have to do it to.
Yeah, actually, Granny Smith is an apple. You'll probably have to do it too, even if it does get cold. I've had nights well below freezing and the Granny Smith just doesn't want to lose its leaves.
Yeah, it's like the Macintosh.
It can be that way too.
All right. And then hopefully we'll get a couple new pear varieties as well. These were varieties I was actually hoping to get last year, but with the crop failure on the pears, we're just going to try again this year. I'm told that there's no crop failure with the pears. So hopefully
it'll be nice to get pears at all.
Yes.
So, yeah, any variety. Yes. Right.
So I'm going to be ordering in the Tennessee pear, which is a cross between the Tennessee and the Hasui. So it's actually a hybrid European Asian pear. And then also a pineapple pear, which is supposed to have a pineapple-y flavor to it as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
So
have you seen the fruit from that one to see whether it dominates more toward the Asian style crispy or?
I have not yet because I was going to, like I said, I was hoping to bring it in last year and then they had the crop failure. So
I love Asian pears. I think
I do too.
I like them. I like them more than just regular pears. They're crisper, firmer, not as mealy, but just
they're crisp. Yep.
It's a really nice plant.
Are you able? I know we talked about this a while ago. Quince. Are you going to be able to bring some quince in?
I do think so. I order them every year. It seems to be every 3 years. Maybe they're actually available, but with one of the new suppliers, I'm ordering from them as well. So hopefully that's a double chance of getting quince in this year.
The orchard I grew up working on had several quince in. Mrs. Pombo, my friend's mom, would make apple butter with the quince and apples, obviously, but delicious.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had quince. Usually, that's the flowering quince is the one that we usually get.
I mean, we get the quince. Couple of years have been the pineapple. I think were the last one I remember.
Yeah, we've been able to get pineapple typically. So. But hopefully we'll get some other varieties as well this year. I'll have at least two or three on order. So if we at least get one, that'll be a good thing.
That'll be nice.
So these are all deciduous fruit trees. What about nuts? Can we get nuts? Do we get different kinds of nuts? That
we do. We're expecting almonds. We usually get those in sleeves, but we should be able to get some in bare root as well this year. Typically, it's the all-in-one almond, but I'm hoping to get a couple other varieties. They're a little harder to get. When I typically order them, they don't always come. Other nut trees, we don't like to sell bare root as much. They don't tend to transplant as well, right. But
yeah, they're tough.
But
they're,
we do get other deciduous nuts like walnuts and pistachios from time to time too. The pistachios come in large sleeves. We actually do have some of those in stock right now as well.
But those are normally during bare root season.
Correct.
Even though they're not bare root.
Correct. Right. They're during the bare root season, yeah. But we actually do have some of those in stock. Sometimes we get some pecans too, although they've been a little harder to get this year.
You need pollinators with the pistachios.
Definitely,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's not the same thing as the Chinese pistachio.
Which is a gorgeous foliage
beautiful,
tree.
Beautiful but, foliage yeah. tree, but yeah. Yeah, not going to produce.
And the pistachios like extreme heat too. You know, if you're living near the coast or Claremont, Poway even, I think, you know, you don't have quite enough heat to do well with them.
Right. The tree will grow, but
the tree will grow, but
it won't be productive, right? It's the opposite of, you need a lot more heat. Yeah,
the walnuts and pecans can be temperamental, let's put it that way, if you're getting them truly as bare root. And I believe that, I think part of that is because of the deep tap root that those trees produce.
Yeah, actually, some of our growers only sell them in 15 gallons, and they don't just sell them in 15 gallons. They put a 5 gallon on top of the 15 gallon, and it roots all the way down through both of those.
To cover it.
Yep. Yeah. We have a pecan growing at my old house that was started from seed, and it is thrived. It's been there 25 years. It gives pecans typically every year. I don't know of any pollinator around it, but it gives fruit, and it's not a massive tree. I know they get big, but it's in time it'll probably get bigger. But it's very productive.
It's a beautiful tree.
It's a gorgeous tree.
It's a really
gorgeous
pretty tree.
Yeah.
One of the prettiest ones I've ever seen is at Grand Traditions in Fallbrook. Right next to the house. There's a massive pecan tree there. It's beautiful. Almost has because of the pinnate foliage, it almost has a tropical look to it. Mm. It's a really, really pretty tree.
There used to be commercial pecan orchards in East County. If you still go down Los Coches out in Lakeside, there will still be remnants, populations of the pecan orchards.
Not know that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting up in Paso Robles is walnuts.
Oh, yeah.
There were a lot of walnut orchards up there. As a matter of fact, you'll still
find... The Central Valley has a lot.
You'll still find in some of the what are now vineyards and wineries in Paso Robles, they'll still have the remnants of some of the walnut orchards that were there before.
Wow.
So, I just planted a pecan at my house. Mine's only about a foot tall. I just grabbed a seedling from my parents' house.
Wow.
But I put it on the south side of my house because I want to get that shade in the summertime and then get the sun in the wintertime. Mm. So I think it'll grow quickly and provide some shade on the south side of the house.
Excellent. We've got a couple of minutes left. What should people be looking out for, or what should people be doing with their deciduous fruit trees as we head into summer?
As we head into summer, water deeply.
Every day?
Infrequently. Oh, okay. If you have a new tree, you're probably want to water it about twice a week, a nice deep watering. Make sure you have a good mulch layer on that to help save on the water. If you have established trees, I'd say every week, even every week and a half, depending on the weather, but a full deep watering all the way from near the trunk, not at the trunk, but near the trunk all the way out to just beyond the drip line of the tree. Also, with the lack of fruit this year and a lot of things not leafing out as well, this would be a good year to summer prune your trees as well. If you want to keep that size under control, now's a good year to prune it back without losing much in the way of fruit production.
I know Tom Spellman is a big fan of
summer pruning.
Spring and summer pruning.
For size. He always talks about size control. Summer pruning for size control.
Yeah. Yes. He said it's much more pleasant doing it in the summertime than it is when it's cold and rainy. So,
if you want to keep your tree controlled for size, this is definitely a year to keep that prune back. If you haven't fed your trees since the spring, it's probably getting toward time to feed them again. And then they can do one more feeding again late summer before we get too late into the fall on those trees as well. You don't want to feed them too much too late in the year because you do want want to encourage them to go dormant when it does get colder as well.
And there's really not a lot of pests that bother deciduous fruit trees for the most part.
I get aphids a lot on my plum trees and peaches.
On the new foliage.
On the new foliage, yes, it's coming out. Caterpillars, especially the red hump caterpillar on my plum trees. And then they're not too bad, but the pear slugs. Get a lot of those on cherry trees and plums. Shot hole fungus once in a while.
A little bit of shot hole, but you still have to treat for that in the fall.
And you leave it anyway. It's a couple holes in some leaves.
Not going to be a big problem.
No. Nope.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clementson, our special guest, Adam Bruderer, our resident fruit tree expert at the Poway store. If you have any questions, you can give him a call, and he would be more than happy to talk to you about any problems you have or anything that you might be looking for. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.